Well, speaking of politics, and speaking of one, not just one, but two people, and not just two, but a whole network of people attempting to change at least this corner of the world, that's British Columbia, we have on the line now Mr. People Power himself, Chris Delaney. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Terry. Hey, Terry.
Good. Yay. And Ron Gray is here as well.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, got the full meal deal here this evening here, the full smorgasbord. Yeah, it's good to be back here, Chris. And, yeah, you know, it's the worst of times and it's the best of times. The best of times, the worst of times is the tale of two cities for your movement, the anti-HST and the recall movement. There seems to be good things, but there's also some sad things happening from your point of view. In the news recently, the recall campaign of Ida Chong seems to be falling a little flat now.
Well, I don't know if I would describe it as sad, actually. I mean, some of it, I guess, is a little frustrating given some of the hurdles we've had to try to overcome there, which are next to impossible based on these crazy rules that you have for recall. But we knew that going in, and we thought we could overcome them, and, you know, one thing after another has sort of made it
even more difficult. But you learn from your mistakes, you learn from the things that you didn't anticipate, and you take that into the next ones. And we said from the beginning that this campaign, for it to work, you were going to have to do, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 of these recalls before you could really determine whether or not it was not going to be an effective use of time, because we know they're difficult. So, yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm sad or anything, although if you were to read the Vancouver Sun today, you would certainly get that impression, although that that article had nothing to do with the interview that I actually conducted when they wrote it.
So. Oh, well, that's very interesting. So, and I recently wrote a column in my debate column in the Tri-City News about whether or not the recall campaigns were worth it. And I haven't agreed with you on all the points on the HST and recall. You know that, Chris.
Yeah.
And I said that, you know what, it really does look like the HST's goose is cooked one way or the other. So the recall campaigns aren't necessarily worthwhile anymore. But I don't want to argue that with you right now. But what I do want to get from you is your sense of, well, maybe you can try to kind of tell us where the HST is right now, depending on who becomes the BC Liberal leader and therefore the next premier. The leading contenders, they all have slightly different or sometimes quite a bit different promises or thoughts about what's going to happen to the HST. And that's important.
Yeah. Well, the biggest problem of all, I guess, is that all of them sort of claim that they're going to support this supposed or so-called referendum coming up. But the difficulty is that it's not a referendum, not in the technical legal sense. It's actually an initiative vote, and that's the legislation it's proceeding under. And an initiative vote requires a supermajority of over 1.5 million people, which is 50% of the registered voters, to approve. And even then, it's non-binding. It just goes back to the legislature. Now, Premier Campbell said he would make it binding, and he would make it a simple majority. But he doesn't have that authority to do that unless he reconvenes the legislature and changes the legislation. So you're taking a promise from a person who, you know, gives you tax cuts one week and takes them away the next. So his word isn't all that reliable.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard any of the leadership candidates say we're going to change the legislation to make this a proper referendum. So the difficulty with that is if you proceed under the current rules, and the recall or the referendum is successful in terms of it being a simple majority, anyone, including the business lobby that took us to court before on the petition, would be in a good position to take the result of that referendum to court and say they didn't pass the threshold.
But isn't this a political question right now? Isn't what the leaders, all the leadership candidates are saying, that isn't what they're saying is that basically, we'll let the people speak, and then once they speak, we will hear it, and we will act accordingly. I mean, that's essentially what Gordon Campbell was saying. It doesn't matter what the law says. If 50% plus one of voters say no to this, then that's it. It's going to be toast.
Yeah.
And I can do that I'm the premier. I'll put legislation in front of the House, and we'll vote her down.
Right.
I don't have to do that, but I will do that.
Right. So the problem with that is that he doesn't have the authority to do that.
He has the authority.
No, he doesn't. He does not have the authority
to introduce legislation. Couldn't they call the legislature back tomorrow, introduce legislation to get rid of the HST?
Tomorrow they could, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if they go forward with the referendum under the Initiative Act, then if they decide to go into the legislature and convene a different result or a different criteria for the result, you could have a business lobby group sue in court to say that the referendum that was conducted under the Initiative Act did not succeed and therefore is not binding. They did that with the initiative petition. They went to court and tried to say that what we'd done was illegal. And we knew that the business lobby that was there was really acting together with the government on this. So it's a bit of a two-pronged strategy. Get the politicians to say that they'll abide by the wishes of the people. Get the business lobby to not abide by it and have the government say, gee, our hands are tied, there's nothing we can do. We're all tied up in court here for the next 2 years while we fight it out to the Supreme Court. And yeah, we're stuck with the HST until we solve that. Well, by then you're into probably another election and you're stuck with the tax and, oh, well, I guess that's the way she goes.
So which of the BC Liberal leaders, Christy Clark has one position, Kevin Falcon has another. What other positions and what are your reaction to each of their positions?
Well, they all have a different position, but in a certain sense, my reaction is the same to all their positions. Put your money where your mouth is and tell us that you're going to reconvene the legislature to uphold a simple majority binding vote, because all of them have agreed to that. They've all had a different way about going about it.
What about Christy Clark's position?
Well,
she's trying to get to this, where she says
she's
going to have a free vote in the legislature right away, even before a referendum.
If she had a truly free vote and allowed the MLAs to vote according to their constituents' wishes, then we would agree to that. We would say, great. If the MLAs vote against their constituents' wishes, and we all know clearly that the constituents don't want it, and if they keep it, then we would begin recalls again.
Well, hang on a second here, Chris. A truly free vote is truly allowing the MLAs to vote whatever way they want, regardless of their constituents, regardless of the party power structure, and that's a free vote. A free vote isn't must vote will of constituents.
Right.
Sorry. Okay,
right.
So
but
if she's
vote,
promised a free vote,
yeah,
and I believe that promise, because I think she's looking for the quickest way of getting rid of the HST.
Yeah. If they get rid of the HST, we're satisfied. If they don't, we'll continue our fight, because we believe the HST was brought in by deceptive means, that they said they weren't bringing it in and then they forced it in after. So if they just use the same legislative techniques to keep the tax, we'll keep fighting them.
Okay. Yeah. Other questions? Carrie.
Well, Ida Chong, and then what other recall efforts are on the move right now that are looking good, Chris?
Yeah, so there's two more that have been launched. One is in Comox Valley, which started, I guess, on Wednesday of last week and did very, very well this weekend. Actually, big numbers coming out of there this weekend. They're not going to release the numbers until the end, because we found that in Oak Bay, this is one of the learnings we got. When you release the numbers, it gives the media and those who oppose what we're doing an opportunity to try to shoot it down. If the numbers are really good, it can also be work against you in that the canvassers think, oh, well, it's well in hand, I don't need to do
right.
the work.
Yeah.
So the idea now, most of them have decided they're going to wait and give general reviews every week, but they're not going to give the final number till the end, and that way it keeps the fight going right to the end. So they've had a really, really good weekend this first weekend, but that's expected because you're going to get all the people who really want to sign and are opposed to it right away. Where the going gets tough is about midway through the campaign, when you've hit all the sort of easy access signatures, and then you've got to get into apartments or get to people that are a little more difficult to get to based on the rules that we have. In Oak Bay, for example, we ran into a situation, and probably this won't happen in Comox, but in Oak Bay, we had about 4,000 or 5,000 civil servants there. Well, we knew that going in, but what we didn't know is that their bosses would gather them together in the offices and issue warnings to them not to sign the petition, which is what happened.
Really?
Yeah, and told them that if they did, that they could lose their jobs.
I don't remember reading about that. Was that
Well, you didn't read about that, because it hasn't been publicized. But
have you issued a press release on that?
We've been told that directly by civil servants, and we've been told it by different people within the government.
So you've got people willing to come forward and saying that publicly?
I believe so. The local candidates, the local canvassers, the local proponents on Thursday, when they reveal the final number, intend to give that information and those details out to the media. So
that's a pretty big story. That's a front page story. If you got some, especially you've got some employee, who's going to come forward and say, "Yes, I was called into an office at so and so time and place, and told not to vote in favor of this."
Yeah,
that's a huge story.
Well, I've mentioned.
I mean, that's not just a story. I'm thinking as a journalist here. That's a major event. I mean,
I've mentioned it a few times, but we haven't been able to corroborate it. But we know anecdotally from going door to door that the reality is that.
Well, hang on a second now.
Well, just let me finish.
Okay.
The overwhelming majority of the civil servants whose doors we knocked on said, "I can't sign. I'm not allowed to sign. I won't sign. I'm afraid to sign."
Huh.
Okay. So, and you're getting that back.
Yeah.
Well, this is a serious, serious charge.
Yeah, of course it is.
And it's
well, have some of those civil servants call me anonymously, and we'll go to their managers and ask some questions, Chris.
Yeah, they may be, you know, I mean, we'll see if some of them have got the courage to do that, but it may be that, you know, some of them are afraid of even doing that, so this is the difficulty. But the local organizers there, as they say, have some specific information on that. And
yeah, you know, if we can find, I mean, just in terms of advancing this, which would be a very important story here, think of a news journalist. Of course, we're journalists here, so it's story.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously an important thing, an event, that some of the canvassers who actually were told, because you have to get this as the evidence as much as you can direct. Right now, it's like hearsay, third-party stuff.
Yep.
We got to get at least closer to it here, because this is a very, very serious charge.
I mean, this obstruction of democracy is.
Obviously, if the recall campaigns are being running into roadblocks for various reasons, this could give recall a huge new impetus.
Yeah.
It could distract distract people from some of the positive momentum that the BC Liberal Party has going for it right now with the leadership race. It could certainly damage the party, which is higher in the polls now than it's been in a long time.
I think it would derail the Liberals.
This is a huge thing. If there's actual evidence there that somebody politically was telling some senior civil servant who then told his workers, "Don't sign the recall,"
That's a criminal offense.
That's huge. That is very huge. I'm just saying that if you keep saying this, and if you don't have any evidence, then it's going to come back on you too, Chris.
Well,
so you can't keep saying this from my point of view.
Yeah.
Or
no,
then
I
I'm
going to
I'm going to be I'm going to in a couple days be
saying.
Accusing you of saying that you're smear mongering.
So here's let's be real clear what I'm saying. I'm saying that we know from the doorstep that civil servants won't sign it. The overwhelming majority will not sign it for fear of reprisal. That we've been told at the door, that I'm prepared to stand.
They are saying, I'm afraid if I sign it.
Let me be clear, because you're saying that I need to wear this too, so I need to finish what it is I said, so I want to clear for your audience and for you what I'm saying.
Okay.
So let me repeat it again. What we know from the door is that the civil servants overwhelmingly there have told us they don't want to sign for fear of reprisal. That we can corroborate through the canvassers who've gone door to door. Whether or not they've actually been instructed that, which we believe they have, that has to be corroborated. And as I say, the local canvassers are the ones that, the local proponents are the ones that are saying that and saying that they have that information. So they're the ones that have to wear that if they don't. I can't say that because I wasn't told directly that that's it. I've been told it by the proponents.
Now you are spreading the news though.
Yeah, I'm repeating it because it's quite clear and obvious that it's happened.
Yeah.
But
we don't know is whether or not these civil servants are saying this, are kind of making up an excuse.
They might
not want to sign, and they might say, "Well, you know, I'm not allowed to sign. It's not a good thing for me to sign because I've been told." You know, they might say that just to get rid of the canvasser without asking any more questions or something.
I don't buy that.
I know. I'm just saying there's all sorts of things.
But it doesn't make any sense because all you have to say is not interested. You don't need to give them a big story about how you're afraid to sign it. That doesn't make any sense.
Chris, I have a question about those signatures then. Is there any privacy attached to those signatures?
No, and that's the problem. Harry Neufeld, who was the chief electoral officer before the acting one was appointed, in 2003 put together a series of recommendations, actually on the request of Premier Campbell, who back in those days seemed to be favorable toward electoral reform, but of course hasn't done anything on it. But he asked the chief electoral officer for recommendations on how to make it work, and two of his recommendations, one was that the list, the voters, the signatories list for the recall petition be made private, that only Elections BC would see it and or the canvassers and the signers themselves. But the NDP had made the rule so that the list was to be made public. Once it was validated by Elections BC, it was to be posted so everybody could see it. Harry said that's fundamentally undemocratic and recommended it be changed, but it never was. So that's one reason why they're afraid. And then the second thing Harry said was that the process itself Elections BC believes that recall itself, or at least under Harry Neufeld, they believed recall was a legitimate process, but that the way it was structured with a single petition vote to remove an MLA was fundamentally undemocratic and it should be a two-pronged process. He recommended that you do a petition for a recall vote, and perhaps the threshold for that was much less than 40%. And then if that was successful, you would go into a secret ballot vote to de-elect the MLA, similar to you would with an election. And those are good recommendations. We accept those, but nobody's implemented them.
Yeah, very good point, because this problem that we were talking about at length a few minutes ago wouldn't exist if you had the secrecy of the ballot. Essentially, we've taken the secrecy away here.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, people have fought wars over having a secret ballot because that's how you, and the reason there's a secret ballot is because people fear retribution from people who don't agree with them if they find out how you voted. So the recall process actually is fundamentally flawed that way. If you had a vote to recall and that list was kept private as well, and then you had a secret ballot vote to actually do the recall in a second prong process, that would also allow a period of time, by the way, for the MLA to defend themselves and make a case as to why they should not be de-elected, so to speak, which is good. You need to hear from both sides, and it would take the sort of emotional side out of it that comes with the petition, and then you could go into a booth and vote either way. I think it would be a more fair and a more democratic process.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because the issues, I mean, HST is you know, relatively benign as far as retribution goes, unless you're a government employee. But there's a whole host of other issues that could be the catalyst for recall efforts that would be very dangerous for a lot of people if their names appeared publicly on issues.
For example, in Kamloops North, which is the other recall that actually is going to get underway on Thursday, you have logging companies there. Maybe the logging companies support the HST because they get a refund, and that's good. And if they see their employees' names on there, all of a sudden you've got problems there. So, you know, it's a flawed process, and that is one of the detriments to what it is we're doing and why it makes it difficult. But one of the things we've learned, another thing that we've learned by doing the recall in Oak Bay, as difficult as the threshold is to meet and as onerous as the rules are, it makes the government go right out of their minds just doing it. So we realize that there's a power in recall all on its own because you're holding the MLA to account in midterm, and you're forcing them to confront the constituents and explain why it is they support a position that perhaps their constituents don't. And they don't like that. They're not used to having to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this close, because we are just a year-ish away from a next provincial election, you know, those positions of those MLAs are going to be very clear and current in the minds of their constituents.
Well, that's for sure, yeah. And all of them are responsible. I mean, one of the arguments Mike Smith tried to make the other day with me was that recall is intended only for, you know, MLAs who break the law or do something unethical.
Yeah.
And I said, well, actually, that's not true. When you break the law, that's what you bring the police in for. If you have to do a recall to get somebody out of office for breaking the law, there's a problem there. I said, you also have a premier for that, too. You should remove somebody if they're unethical or they break the law.
Good point.
So I don't buy that. And I said, this Paul Reitzma case, which was the strongest one of all, the guy that wrote the fake letters to the editor in Nanaimo, I said, what he did was wrong because it's deceitful, but I said, Ida Chong did something worse. She supported a government that said it wouldn't give us an HST and then turned around and did. Then when we did a petition to show them the dissatisfaction or disagreement by the public with it, she defended the government against her own constituents and continued to defend the duplicity of that government. So that's worse than writing a bad letter to the editor, because you're dealing with a policy that you said you wouldn't bring in, and you're actually taking people's money without their permission. So I can't even think of a worse thing that a person could do and a more appropriate use of recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's not in opposition to the policy itself, which we've never really had the debate on whether HST is good or not. It's in opposition to being told you weren't getting one and then turning around and imposing it on the people against their will.
I got to change the subjects. Ron has been looking at doing.
Chris, I just wanted to ask you for an update on what's happening with BC First.
That's the subject I was going to change it to.
Right. BC First is going well. We've got a board in place now of about 14 people, very, very good people. All new people, new faces, new names. There's a couple, you know, from the past, but the majority of them are people none of us have seen or heard from before. So that, to me, is a good sign because it's showing new blood and new interest coming in. And then we've got about another 32 constituency organizers who have agreed to help organize in each one of the 85 constituencies. So there's 32 of the 85 and more coming on sort of every week.
Chris, is the fact that you are now working with BC First and playing a lead role with this new burgeoning political party, is that possibly hindering the recall effort as well? And the reason I say that is that you are a big driving force behind the anti-HST petition and the recall,
yep,
which is a nonpartisan thing in a way that it could attract people from any party who just don't like politicians lying to them and deceiving them and not giving them the whole truth and all that sort of stuff. And the other hand, you're also associated with a very partisan, very specific political party. Some people might think, well, you know, I'm a good old-fashioned NDPer here. I don't want to vote for this recall because I'll just be giving succor to crystallinian BC First, or maybe there's even a BC Liberal person who would say the same thing. I better bow out of this now. When it was totally nonpartisan and when Delaney and Vanderzam, when Delaney especially wasn't involved in BC First and was this anti-HST thing, fine. But now that he's also BC First, he's kind of trying to wear two hats at the same time, and something doesn't smell right there.
Yeah, I haven't heard that from anybody.
You just heard it now.
Yeah, the reason I don't think I've heard it is because the desire for BC First came out of the Fight HST from all of the people who actually said to us from the very beginning when we first started the campaign against the HST, meeting after meeting after meeting, and it didn't matter whether it was kind of a Liberal riding or an NDP riding, they all said the same thing. Well, if we get rid of this MLA, if we get rid of this government, who do we vote for? And they all wanted a third party, and so we sort of one after the other. And at that time, I was actually with the BC Conservatives, and so Bill would say to them, because Bill's not a member of any party, he'd say, well, if you want to talk about another party, you can talk to Chris after the meeting kind of thing. And the meetings weren't for the purpose of that, but there were so many people wanted to talk about it. So they'd come to me, and I'd say, well, here's the BC Conservatives' position, and then this weird sort of thing happened. While I'm out fighting the HST, the BC Conservative Party was being infiltrated by federal conservatives who were looking for ways to keep the HST. I ended up quitting that party as a result of that and then going with these group of people from BC First, which were mostly people who had come out of the Fight HST looking for this alternative. So to give you an example, we were in Kamloops about 3 weeks ago for sort of a kickoff organizational meeting there. And the proponent there is an NDP, card-carrying NDP member, and Fight HST has always been a broad coalition of people, nonpartisan in that it's a group with no specific political party, but multi-partisan in that people from all different parties have joined in. So at that meeting, we thought most of the people in the room, there's about 55 of them there, we thought they'd be mostly NDPers because they'd be friends of the guy that had started it. Well, we finished all our speeches there. There was no talk of political parties, and first question out of their mouths, it's the same almost at every meeting, is, we need an alternative, you know, what are we going to do? And then everyone went, yeah, and it was like the whole room lit up with this sort of desire for it. So Bill says, look, I'm not a member of a political party, but Chris is, if you want to talk to him about that after, you can. And then people all swarmed me. They wanted to hear all about this party. So I was like, I was actually kind of surprised because, like I say, I thought they'd be an NDP crowd. So what we're finding is there's a lot of people that are saying, yeah, we're dissatisfied with this government. We're not sure we want to go back to the other way. We want a third party. So it is a little tricky wearing two hats because the Fight HST is a nonpartisan thing.
Right,
and I try
right.
To...
Okay, I have got a question. Has Bill Thielman taken out membership with BC First yet?
No.
I don't think so.
No, Bill's actually come out solidly in support of Adrian Dix.
Well, okay, so there's your answer, Terry O'Neill.
Yeah. Bill Thielman is solidly NDP and always has been.
Yes.
And again, I think that's why people are accepting of my role and Bill's role, because they know it's everybody. And I don't use the vehicle as an opportunity to talk about it unless you guys ask me. But
mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, it's an interesting stuff happening. And, you know, I'm just reading on your website that BC First has gotten involved in the Neverland, that is the BC Human Rights Tribunal. You have a press release from January 11th about the BC First Party acting as an official intervener in a human rights tribunal case dealing with, why don't you explain this? Because this is really quite interesting.
Yeah.
And it could amount to a real charter right where somebody's being persecuted because of his political beliefs or actions.
Well, we had a canvasser, actually, ironically, here in my riding of Port Coquitlam, a fellow by the name of Elwin Mowry, who acted actually as an organizer, canvasser for the petition. And he, very low-profile kind of guy, nobody knew who he was, but he sat at a table and took signatures during the couple months that we were doing that, and was very active in it. And previous to that, he had been an election organizer, actually a district captain for Elections BC and actually Elections Canada in two subsequent elections. And he's a former bank manager. He's a very professional guy, retired now, and very sophisticated, educated person, and done a great job with these
other... I think I know him.
Sorry?
I think I know him.
Yeah, you might. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I'd never met him before, but he called me up and he said, Chris, he says, I applied to Elections BC. Elections BC had actually sent him an application form saying we're looking for organizers to help with the upcoming referendum and the election in 2013, and you'd done a good job for us last time. We're wondering if you'd like to reapply. So he sent in his application, and they rejected him. And he said, well, that's kind of weird. Why did you invite me to apply if you didn't want me? And they said, well, the chief electoral officer looked at it, and he matched your name with the files here that show you were a canvasser, and so he's rejected you because he said you're partisan. And Elwin's position was, well, first of all, the role, the position of an electoral district person requires you to be nonpartisan during that period. You can't be, actively campaigning for a political party while you're actually conducting elections, but you're going to vote.
Yeah.
In that respect, everybody is somewhat partisan, but the idea is that you keep that to yourself. So he said, first of all, the Fight HST was not a political party issue. It was a political issue about democracy.
Right.
And so he said, and I'm low profile, nobody even knows who I am. So he said, he asked them, he went back and he said, all right, well, if that's your criteria, does that apply to people who were in favor of the HST and who publicly came out and said that they opposed the petition and were, supportive of it?
Right.
And they said, well, each case is taken on a case-by-case basis.
Oh!
So they were playing a little fast and loose there. And so Elwin felt that his civil rights had been violated, his human rights. And the Human Rights Act, I can't remember which section it is, but it lists... political belief as a prohibited grounds that you cannot discriminate against someone for a job.
Section 13.1, I think you've got here.
So he filed his application, and we're allowed to act as he's allowed to have an intervener, and so we said we would support him because we felt that that was wrong, that he had not done anything wrong. He'd always shown himself as professional and impartial in his duties, and that his activity as a canvasser should not disqualify him, because if it did, it means that just about no one in BC is qualified to undertake the role Elections BC needs, because if anybody had publicly ever admitted who they voted for or took a stand with a letter to the editor or any of those kinds of things, which most people do at some point in their life, then they would be disqualified from working for Elections BC. And
obviously, man is interested in politics and the political process. He's an involved and informed individual, and took part in the official infrastructure to facilitate elections in the past. But probably, he's a good citizen, it sounds like. And as a good citizen, decided he wanted to be a canvasser for the anti-HST petition as well, and saw that as sort of part of his involvement as a good citizen, And now he's being penalized for that.
Yep.
That does not seem fair, and it does not seem right. Because,
and
you know, what did
they very low profile. Like, if it had been me, you could see them saying, well, that's not right. People are going to know you're partisan to this issue. You can't possibly be viewed as impartial. But a guy like him, nobody even knows. I mean, we talked to lawyers before we actually decided to act as interveners for him. And the lawyers all agreed with us that he had a very strong case and that his right to his own political beliefs had been violated.
Right. So. Good point. Well, there's something else maybe has to keep on top of, and please keep us informed of what happens with this.
Yeah, he's only received a notice back from them that they've received the application and they're reviewing it, so we haven't heard anything more. So.
Okay, thank you.
Listen, folks, and Chris, I just want to draw to your attention. We got an email, actually, from our Radio Warrior of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Lauter has, and this is part of the fruit of the time that was taken off, the couple of months that we were working behind the scenes, because now, if there's someone who wants to give us some information about civil servants being pressured by their boss or some of this other kind of anti-democratic interference, but you want to do it anonymously, you can send us an email, and the address is newstips@roadkillradio.com.
Hmm.
And
we have a tip line now.
Yeah,
people.
We've now got a tip line where you can give us this kind of information, retain your anonymity, give us as much information as you can to help us do the work of tracking down what needs to be tracked down, because it is a major story.
And your name would really help in most certain cases, but if that's impossible, then...
Yeah, but, well, if you choose to put it in, it'll still be kept confidential.
Well, yeah.
But,
I mean,
but,
the thing with that is you have to corroborate it, and this is the difficulty.
Yeah, we've got to do some legwork, but it gets us started.
So,
in other words, people get really pissed off and get mad enough that you're willing to take a stand and send us some bloody emails with the details.
And the address again.
Go for it, Kerry.
The address again is newstips@roadkillradio.com.
Tell us how you really feel, Kerry.
I was practicing restraint there, Chris.
Yeah.
You don't give me full license, I might take you up on it.
Well, you know, it's very disheartening to hear things like that, and as Terry says, it does have to be corroborated.
Yeah.
But we do know, as I say, from going door to door, that there was a tremendous reluctance on the part of most of them. Although, here's an interesting story. Linda Johnson, who used to be the deputy chief electoral officer at Elections BC until she was fired by Craig James, if you remember that story. She'd been there 28 years, and he thought he'd come in and reorganize it and fire her. One of the canvassers who I met went to her door, didn't realize it was her door. She showed up, and she signed the petition. And her husband came up and said, "What's that?" And she said, "Oh, it's the recall guys." He goes, "Give me that thing." He signed it, too.
Well, I guess we know where she won't be working.
Well, she can afford to do it now. She's not working for anybody.
So. Okay, good. What's next with BC First?
Well, you know, I want to know what's all this I hear about you trying to charm and seduce Gordon Wilson back into political life.
Well, I have spoken to Gordon a couple times and asked him if he would consider coming over and participating with us at the board level or whatever. He expressed to me he had no interest in running again, and I said, that's fine. I said, but, you know, we want to build a broad coalition. We want people who want to help take this province back from what we believe are two political parties, really, that are committed to special interests that we think are outside the general interest of the province. And I think Gordon is favorable to that view. I don't know whether he will actually come and support BC First or not, but he said he would consider it, and that's the last I've spoken to him about it, so we'll see. But he's been blogging lately about you know, a lot of the issues we've been raising, and he said a number of people saying to him, you should join, you should help, you should do this, because they see BC First as a movement of the people, a broad coalition of the people to take the province back. I mean, if we keep going with the Liberals as they are, we're going to end up in a generation with a province that's owned by outside interests and a generation of people coming up who never knew that we used to own it ourselves. So.
Yeah, same game, bad story. But I have a little story about Gordon Wilson. You know, all the years, Chris, I mean, you know how involved politically I've been with all political parties. I work with the Citizens Research Institute. We used to have a motto, we'll help any political party that asks for it. We'll take any political party to task who needs it, you know.
Yeah.
And through my work, we worked with a lot of politicians, you know, some good, most bad, but two really outstanding politicians that were very committed were Gordon Wilson and Judy Taiabji.
Wow.
You know, I can remember working with them very much on the child protection issues. And, you know, I recall very fondly their commitment, the hours that they would put in, their understanding, and truly trying to seek solutions to the problems that, you know, so we weren't revisiting the same issues again and again, year after year. And I'm, of course, I'm thinking about deaths of children in care. You know, we were dealing with that 20 years ago, people saying the same thing that they're saying at every report now. You know, so kudos to you if you can convince Gordon to come back and step back into this arena. The province would be better for it.
Well, you know, that's interesting to hear, Carrie, because I've actually gotten to become friends with Judy quite a bit through Facebook, and we've emailed each other back and forth on a number of issues and talked about things, and I've really come to know and respect her in terms of her commitment to people, to the province, to many of these issues, and really heartfelt stuff that, that she's telling me that, you know, isn't stuff she's putting out there to be elected to anything. I think she has no interest in that. I think she just really cares. And so,
you know, she was very courageous, both Gordon and Judy, courageous. They weren't that concerned about being popular. I think they understood that if they did the right thing, people would get it.
Yeah.
And I really was impressed with that approach, the leadership that they demonstrated, Chris, on those areas.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, I've really come to respect them now.
Say hi to her for me.
Okay? Just a little more background on Gordon Wilson and possible re-entry into some sort of involvement in the provincial government scene here. Just for background for our non-British Columbia listeners, he was the leader of the BC Liberal Party. He got basically forced out because of his relationship with Judy Taiabji, and Gordon Campbell took over. That's real shorthand. But anyway, last spring, Vaughn Palmer, the noted Vancouver Sun columnist, blogged about another person's blog, which was because I found Vaughn's first. Andrew McLeod, legislative correspondent for the Tyee, said, quote, Wilson was in Victoria floating the idea of bringing back the PDA, which was the Progressive Democratic Alliance Party that he and Judy Taiabji launched, a populist, sort of moderate populist party, middle-of-the-road politics generally, not left, not right, more populist, and BC-centric. This is before Wilson joined the NDP cabinet.
Yeah.
He floated the idea of bringing back the PDA, and McLeod then quoted a shorthand posting by Wilson on his Facebook site, and that said, if HST comes to be and approval is given for the Site C, that's the Site C dam, it will be clear for all to see we need a new government in BC. Mm-hmm. So 2013 E-Day in May, maybe we should offer the PDA. I mean, it kind of rhymes there too, doesn't it?
I was going to give you credit for being the poet.
No, that was it. So anyway, Wilson at the time, what led Vaughn Palmer, the noted columnist, to talk about this was that Wilson was actually in the provincial legislature and was introduced to the legislature by an MLA as being there. And so all of a sudden the tongues were a-twittering about Gordon Wilson. It would be something. Gordon Wilson will be, let me see, he was BC Liberal, then he went to the NDP, and then he went...
Well, I think he went PDA,
PDA
first, and then
sorry,
NDP.
PDA, then NDP.
The NDP.
And he was actually the finance minister of British Columbia at one time.
Was he really?
Yeah,
I forgot.
With the NDP.
That.
A lot
My
of people
goodness.
Forget that.
Hey, you got a good review by Rafe Mayer in the Tyee today, Chris Delaney.
Yeah, Rafe, I think, also realizes, like many people, that the paradigm, the political paradigm in British Columbia is actually shifting.
Yes.
And the main punditry, we'll call them the corporate media, either doesn't see that or deliberately wants to ignore it, but... The old paradigm of left-right, which actually worked to the benefit of the NDP and the Liberals, I think has given way to a new paradigm, which is, you know, globalism versus economic nationalism.
Yeah.
And whether BC is going to be an autonomous province that can govern its own affairs or not. And
boy, there's a lot to talk
about. Or my politics. Thing. Don't pigeonhole me.
Yeah, well, that's probably where I fit in here. Because
yeah. But a lot of you guys, I think, are very indicative of many British Columbians who sort of look at themselves non-ideologically and say, look, sort of, I guess, for lack of a better word, they're pragmatists. They look and go, well, what's best for BC and what's best for us as taxpayers? And they don't care about these things on an ideological level, but the political parties use that to divide and conquer. And
good. Listen, we have to say goodbye because we're running out of time here, Chris Delaney. We
got just having so much fun.
Thank you very much for joining us.
We'll probably do this again.
Being part of our New Year's Eve party here. I wore a tuxedo today.
Any excuse for sharing. Any excuse.
No, I thought it's been 2 months since we've been here, so we have a lot of fun.
He just wanted to remind me of how good he looks.
Now, Carrie's really going to miss me now. I know she's going to be thinking about me all week.
I
appreciate you guys having me on, and I appreciate you asking me the tough questions. That's always the best way.
Okay, thank you very
good
much,
stuff,
Chris.
Good night.
Continue good fortune. Bye bye.
Good night, Chris.
That's Chris Delaney, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
I think we had our therapy moments, even though we even though we didn't formally itemize them as therapy. But
do we have to start listing them?
No,
now?
We don't. You know, they sort of come and.
Hey, it's Roadkill Radio,
that's right? It's great to be back. It really is.
It is.
I did miss. I miss the camaraderie here. I miss the way we tackle the issues. You know, and I'm. It's so good that we have some fun with it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's serious stuff, but we want to entertain people to engage them, and I think that's what part of makes Roadkill Radio work is our engagement with each other and with the issues, with the people we talk with, and with especially
with our audience.
Yeah. And
happy
and
to have people emailing us in during the show because.
That's right.
And all the phone calls I deal with after the show. Because everyone who doesn't email calls me the next 2 days.
I got a busy week in front of me again. I've got lots of stuff happening, but I always make room for Roadkill Radio. And
all right,
good stuff.
And we're out of time. See you next week, everybody.
See you next week, everyone. Yeah. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio.